Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, episode 66, we're talking about stress and anxiety in your 40s, which is really common to either worsen or heighten if it's something that you, for example, anxiety is something that you've already been struggling with, or for it to just come on completely unannounced, completely new, and just creep up just all of a sudden. And you think, why am I feeling more stressed and anxious in my 40s than ever before? So in this episode, I want to dive into why you might suddenly feel more anxious, stressed, overwhelmed, irritable, puffy, maybe wired but tired, unable to sleep at night. You're feeling absolutely exhausted, but you're just wired and you can't sort of fathom, you know, getting into bed and just being able to fall into a lovely deep sleep. Any of these symptoms, if they're new to you or they have increased in your 40s, even though nothing in your life particularly has changed, then that's what we're diving into today, is really understanding why this is happening. A lot of women tell me, and I am experiencing this myself, I can feel something shifted, but I just can't explain it. So if this resonates with you, you're not imagining it, you're not mad, you're not crazy, your stress response does change in your 40s. Now, the only difference between, say, me, where I'm saying that I have experienced this as well, and I can feel like something shifted and I can't explain it, because this is my job and, you know, I've studied this stuff for the last, I've been qualified and in practice for the last 11 years, but I was studying it for 4 years before I was qualified. So this is something I live and breathe every day. And it's what I do for a living, help women with this. So I'm always in the research. I'm always learning more. I'm always doing more continued CPD, continued professional development stuff. So therefore, I have the answers. I don't feel that sort of real, you know, confusion and that extra layer of anxiety over what to do, because I do know what to do. But that doesn't mean I'm immune from, you know, experiencing these symptoms, because absolutely I do. It's just the difference is I have the tools at my disposal. I know what's going on. So I can say, right, well, I know that I need to fix, probably shift this and this, tweak that, put that in, take that out, stop doing this, start doing that. And usually I get a handle on these sorts of symptoms pretty much straight away, very quickly. And so my whole purpose of creating this podcast was to get this information out to any woman who comes across my podcast and is feeling these things and wants an answer. That is exactly what this is about. Empowered perimenopause is to give you these answers. So that is what what this episode is all about. So the root of the stress response changing in our 40s is cortisol, nervous system, and shifting hormones. Shifting hormones changes cortisol and changes your nervous system, how your nervous system responds, I should say, to your environment. So let's unpack what's really happening. So this might be quite a big, juicy one. So you just bear with me as I go through all the sort of different parts. So let's look at part one of this. So the symptoms of cortisol, let's have a look at the sort of typical symptoms of cortisol changing in your 40s. So you might recognize any or all of these: feeling overwhelmed by things that never bothered you before, irritability and anger that you can't explain. For many of us, we can explain why we might feel irritable, maybe noises people are making, or just, you know, having a lot going on in one room at any one time, or someone that's not supporting enough. But it's just this kind of increase, this real intensity of irritability and anger that we can't always quite explain, like why it was feeling that heightened. Anxiety that feels out of nowhere. I've always used this example with myself. When I first first ever noticed this anxiety out of nowhere. I was about 42, sitting on the sofa, just watching TV, watching something I was enjoying, probably on Netflix after dinner, feeling absolutely fine with life. And then this just overwhelming feeling of fear and anxiety is the only way I could explain it, just washed over me in that moment. And I just felt this, it was awful. I just really, really didn't enjoy it in that moment. It passed. But that was my first experience of this anxiety that feels out of nowhere. Again, I got a handle on that quite quickly. The next thing is puffy face, puffy hands, puffy wrists. I experience this. I notice it all the time. My wrists are sort of more creases around my wrists because they must be puffy all the time. Puffy fingers, puffy ankles, maybe puffiness in different parts of your legs. That sort of bloated belly feeling. Waking up between the hours of 2 and 4 a.m. with a racing mind, waking up exhausted, but you can't get back to sleep because you can't stop your mind from racing about stuff. That again, feeling tired but wired, you're really exhausted, but you're just unable to switch off. Maybe you start to dread going to bed because you know you're not going to be able to switch off and fall into a sleep. You may be experiencing hair shedding, thinning hair on your crown, for example. Weight gain, particularly around the middle, much more common than just regular weight gain. But of course, weight gain everywhere is common too. But particularly belly fat is a really big one. You may be feeling less resilient, just generally, just less resilience to stress, less tolerance for stress that was fine before. A life load that was always absolutely fine is now suddenly very hard to tolerate. Poor sleep, generally. So maybe you're noticing that you're sleeping okay, like you don't have issues waking up in the night with a racing mind, you don't have issues falling asleep, but you're starting to wake up in the morning feeling just exhausted, like you've not slept. Never waken up feeling refreshed. You may be feeling inflamed or achy pretty much all the time. For some of us, we only notice these things in the lead up to our period. For others, we're experiencing it pretty much all the time. We're not really noticing a time in the month where it feels okay. There could be a week in the month or 5 days in the month where it feels okay. For others, it is literally just in that lead up to our period. And my experience is I get a lot of these sorts of things in the lead up to my period. Whereas historically, although I've always known when I'm coming on because I feel that I've tracked my periods anyway, but even if I wasn't tracking my cycles, I'd always know. I'd always have that little feeling in my tummy that, you know, my period was coming. I might feel a little bit tired, a little bit less social, but it was never anything to write home about. It was just that very, very mild, I know my period's coming, that's it. But what I'm noticing now in my 40s, and way more so now this year than ever before, and I'm just turned 46, is just how intense my PMS actually is. And for me, it's more about the brain fog. And my sleep just starts to, my sleep isn't bad, it's just different. It's just different to it is in the other times of the month, but more so than it used to have been, it would have been in my 30s. And for me, it's the brain fog. It's the ability to concentrate, to focus, to perform well in my work. And it really is starting to impact my whole entire work diary. I'm now looking at my calendar every month, and when I see that I'm due on, I'm like ready to clear the week because I just think I can't do any work that week. I can't do any work those 3-4 days before my period because I'm no good to anyone. And that was never how I experienced it before now. So yeah, if that resonates, just wanted to put that out there. So these are all, everything I just went through, these are classic signs that your cortisol rhythms, so the sort of balance of your cortisol across the day, and your stress system is dysregulated, and perimenopause makes that much more likely. So that takes us on to what actually happens to cortisol in your 40s. So let's talk about the physiology. So cortisol first, it's not an enemy. It's not a bad hormone at all. It's a fantastic, really important hormone. It keeps us alive. It responds to stress. It's our stress response, which we need. It helps to wake us up in the morning. It's part of our circadian rhythm, our sleep-wake cycle. It regulates inflammation. It supports our immunity. And it gives us energy. So it's a wonderful hormone in balance. But in perimenopause, your relationship with cortisol starts to shift. How it balances it, how it's regulated in the body really does shift. So first of all, that decline in progesterone we start to experience late 30s, early 40s, the first sort of show of perimenopause, that starts to lead to a less nervous system stability, basically. So we're now, progesterone is very calming, it's very stabilizing, it increases a brain chemical called GABA, which is a calming, anti-anxiety, sort of soothing brain neurotransmitter. So when that starts to decline, we start to have less resilience, less nervous system stability. So we're not experiencing that calming, soothing, anti-anxiety, pro-sleep effect of progesterone when it starts declining. The nervous system then becomes more reactive without those things. And then we have the erratic nature of estrogen. So it's not necessarily declining, not depends where you are in perimenopause, but it's usually not declining until later 40s. But again, it depends on the person. But we've got this, the most important characteristic of estrogen in perimenopause is that it's erratic. Instead of a gentler ebb and flow that it had in your regular menstrual cycling years, it's now an erratic, it's not an ebb and flow anymore. It's an erratic roller coaster. Very high one minute, very low the next, high one minute, no, low the next. And that leads to an exaggerated stress response every day, you know, all the time. Estrogen supports serotonin. These are our brain chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, which are really great for supporting mood, motivation, and stress resilience. So when estrogen spikes and crashes and so on, the stress response becomes more sensitive. All of this puts your brain on this sort of hyper-scanning mode. So you've got this erratic estrogen, you've got this decline in progesterone, these two really protective nervous system stabilizing hormones. One of them's really erratic, the other one's declining. Now your brain becomes hyper-scanning. It's more vigilant, it's watchful, it's more quick to activate fight or flight. I really experience this. I feel this sort of heightened vigilance. Like I've noticed it when I'm out, I'm looking around like, who's there? What's that? What's that? What's that noise? What's this? And I notice it all the time. And I have to sort of say to myself, relax. There's nothing, you don't need to be vigilant, but it just becomes this innate thing. As you said, more watchful, you're on the lookout. So you're just constantly ready to activate fight or flight. I can be washing up and I wish you were all here to answer, but who gets that thing where their partner or their child or whoever they live with walks into the room and they literally jump, scream at times. My partner just knows it now. He's just like, oh God. He's like, I don't know what to do. I can't creep in. Like, I'm creeping in. I'm bursting in. He's trying all these different ways to see if it doesn't scare me, but it just does. All he has to do is appear at my door, whatever room I'm in, and I will just jump. So, you know, not every time, but a lot of the times it depends. If I've had a very stressy day and now I'm washing up and we're doing this, I'm trying to get that done and I need to sit down and, you know, and then he'll walk in the room at that point and I'll just scream. So that's really common as well, just this hypervigilance. And this is why so many women say, everything makes me anxious now. I can't handle stress like I used to. I feel far less tolerant, less resilient to life. All these things that I was handling absolutely fine, I now just feel so much less resilience to them. My fuse is so short. My brain feels unsafe. That is a big one. My brain feels unsafe. I feel this. I can be out sometimes and I just want to go home. I just want to go home. So this is because hormonally, your brain doesn't feel as safe as it used to because of the hormonal changes, I should say. It's like I said, it's putting your brain in this hypervigilant state. It just doesn't feel as safe. So a clue there is wanting to basically needing to put things into our day, habits that tell our brain we're safe. That's how we counteract this and lots of other things as well, which I'll talk about. So that brings us on to the nervous system. This is your brain's safety system. This is a big piece missing from most conversations about midlife stress, perimenopause stress. Your nervous system has one primary job, to determine if you are safe or not. So it's constantly scanning. It's constantly scanning everything. It's constantly scanning your relationships, your workload, your home environment, your money, your finances, your thoughts, your relationships with your family, your friends, your work colleagues, your thoughts, your mindset, your physical well-being. So it's scanning the body, looking for blood sugar imbalances, it's looking for alcohol, it's looking for inflammation, it's looking for gut infections, it's constantly scanning, looking for imbalances physiologically. It is scanning your sleep, it's scanning your community, your boundaries constantly. If the brain determines I am not safe, it activates cortisol, adrenaline. We get a surge in blood sugar despite the absence, despite food not being there. We get inflammation, inflammatory responses. We get a breakdown of muscle quite commonly with all of this cortisol release. We get a digestive shutdown. We get an ovulation shutdown. So in times of stress, you've probably all heard this before in the fight flight response. You know, let's say where it's evolved. So back in our, let's say, caveman days, when a person had to run away from a tiger, when it was out foraging for food, a tiger was about to kill it. It either had to fight or flee. So that's activating the fight or flight response. And what's happening there is all of these things, the blood sugar is releasing, it's high so that we can fight or flee in that moment quickly. Inflammation increases. But things that are deemed as unimportant in that moment while we're trying to fight or flee get shut down, including your digestive system, all your digestive processes, and ovulation, so your reproductive system, basically. And it also leads to poor thyroid signaling if the brain deems it unsafe. But back in our caveman days, those moments of stress were very few and far between, and they were very short-lived. Whereas today's modern day stress, all those things I just listed off, are not few and far between. They're chronic. They're daily, practically. And they are not short-lived. They're chronic. They're always there. So if we're always in a state of fight or flight, or it's constantly being activated, because we're not going to be always in that state. When we're asleep, we're usually in rest and digest. But, you know, if we're just more often than not in fight flight, and it's more chronic, so it's not just short-lived, and we've got this cortisol, adrenaline, blood sugar release, inflammatory responses, muscle breakdown, poor thyroid signaling, ovulation disruption, which is, remember, ovulation is how we make progesterone. So we want to keep that going. And the digestive system shuts down. You know, think of all the body processes and symptoms that's the body processes that's going to affect, and the symptoms that can create. So you literally can't feel calm if your brain doesn't feel safe. This is biology. It's not so much mindset. So, you know, we can use affirmations. We can say we're safe, we're safe, we're safe. But the brain, your biology needs to feel it. It's not just that we can talk it. Your body needs to be given the signals that everything is safe, not just the words. So let's have a look at so why modern day stress is literally breaking our physiology. So your brain is wired for acute, as I said, short-term stress, like that example of being chased by a lion or a tiger. But now with this constant stress, you've got constant fight flight. So think of the fact that we have emails, we have notifications popping off all the time. We have emails on our phones. We have financial worries. We may have traffic. We may be stuck in traffic. We may live near traffic. We may hear a lot of traffic. We may have sick children, sick parents or other loved ones. We may have a big workload. We may be a perfectionist, a type personality. We may lack support. We may be exhausted. We might be over-exercising for what our body, our biology can tolerate at this time. We may be doing too much of the more less helpful types of exercise from what we can deal with right now. So lots of cardio, lots of HIIT, not enough weightlifting, not enough restorative movement. We may be under-eating. We may be accidentally under-eating or purposely under-eating because we think we need to go on diet. So we may be purposely restricting calories. We may be accidentally under-eating on protein, on fats. We might be scrolling on our phones all the time, but particularly at night before bed, getting all anxious and comparison mode and blue light exposure before bed, impacting our sleep. We might be consuming a lot of news, too much news, all of it very bad these days. We might be lonely. We might be caretaking. We might have a chronic illness that we're dealing with. Your brain interprets all of this as threat, and therefore your body keeps producing cortisol. And sometimes this goes on for years. So we can be in this high cortisol state, this real high dysregulated cortisol state for many years. And now after long-term stress, you can then start to transition from the high cortisol state, tired but wired, anxious, puffy, the belly fat, poor sleep, into a low cortisol state. So this is now where you would feel fatigue, maybe chronic fatigue, low mood. You just feel completely burned out. You've got no resilience anymore. You're dizzy, particularly when you get up out of bed in the morning or get up from sitting down. You just feel dizzy. You can't work out like you used to. You get dizzy. You don't have the strength to work out like you used to. It can kind of feel like there's nothing left in the tank. And this isn't what we commonly used to refer to as adrenal fatigue, where those adrenal glands that release cortisol and adrenaline are now fatigued. That's not actually a thing. It's that your adrenal glands, they don't fail. It's more that your brain to adrenal communication, that connection between the two, breaks down. That's something we call HPA axis dysregulation. H stands for hypothalamus in the brain. P stands for pituitary in the brain. And then the A stands for adrenal. So it's the brain to adrenal connection. That brain to adrenal connection is dysregulated. That is what is the situation, as opposed to adrenal fatigue, if you've ever been told that. So what can be really helpful here is a 4-point cortisol test. So you would do this in a 4-point saliva test. It's usually just called a 4-point adrenal index or adrenal stress index. So for example, labs like Genova Diagnostics do one. I tend to use the Dutch test, because whilst you're also getting the 4-point cortisol saliva test, you're also getting results for lots of other things like how we break down estrogen. We're looking at how we break down testosterone, how much progesterone we're making. We're looking at some nutrient levels as well, and antioxidant levels and oxidative stress stuff. So it's just got a real full picture. So the 4-point cortisol saliva testing can tell you exactly where you are with regards to this HPA axis dysregulation. I do a lot of this testing in my practice, and I see it all the time where women will say, they come to me saying, oh, I think I've got high cortisol. My cortisol's really high. And, you know, we do the test and we find it's really low. It's lower all the different 4 points in the day. And so they're just, their brain to ovary communication needs a lot of love and nurturing and nourishment so that it can come back online to start producing cortisol and produce it at the right points of the day, at the right amounts, at the right different points of the day, if that makes sense. So it isn't actually your cortisol that's the problem. It's more your capacity. So the goal isn't to get rid of stress. That is impossible, particularly in our modern day world. The goal is to create a physiology that feels safe. We want to tell the brain we're safe. We want the brain to know, to understand it's fine, it's safe. You don't need to be so vigilant. You don't need to be constantly scanning for threat and taking XYZ as threat. Because a body that feels safe burns fat efficiently, so does not have excess belly fat, sleeps deeply, digests well, builds muscle, regulates hormones better, ovulates more consistently, and therefore makes progesterone more consistently. Despite being in a phase of life where it declines, we can still help it to stay up as much as possible. And a body that feels safe produces less cortisol, or I shouldn't say it produces less cortisol. It has a regulation of cortisol. It is better able to regulate its cortisol levels, and we produce the right amounts at the right times. So there's these 4 points in the day where cortisol should be high, low, and that's usually dysregulated when we see somebody with this HPA axis dysregulation situation. So a body that feels safe will have cortisol produced at the right times, at the right amounts at the right times, and it will be a more balanced amount, not too high, not too low. Safety. Telling the brain we're safe is the root of healing. So I'm a nutritional therapist. So in my practice, of course, the word nutrition speaks for itself. We're looking at nutrition. We're looking at food. We're looking at potential supplements, nutrients in supplement form. We're looking at balance. But one of the most important parts of my work with clients is the lifestyle side of things, where we're supporting safety. We're supporting them to build habits into their day-to-day life that signal to the brain that they're safe. This is what I, again, live and breathe with, like I said, with clients, but also with myself. I work from home, so I have the flexibility to build things into my day, whether it's, you know, the fact that I've got a yoga mat laid out by my desk 24/7, I don't even roll it up anymore. And I've got that space where I can just get down and, you know, do some downward dogs or just do some child's pose or a shavasana, or just lie down and meditate for 10 minutes, depending on, you know, how I feel at any given time. I can do some qigong between meetings. I can just take a cup of tea out onto my outdoor space just for 5 minutes of time by myself without my phone. So weaving in these things through the day. And then, you know, however you can, if you're not in a position, you're not working from home, you're in an office or you're in a public environment where you work, there's still ways that we can weave micro moments into our day that tell the brain we're safe. So rebuilding safety in your nervous system is so key. Absolutely key. Of course, good nutrition, the right targeted supplements, very, very helpful. Sleep, hugely helpful, because the better our sleep is, that sleep is another way to send a safety signal to your brain. If you've had a bad night's sleep, your brain is on high alert all day. It doesn't feel safe, versus the other way around. You have a good night's sleep, your brain feels more calm, more safe. So of course, we're working on nutrition. We're working on blood sugar balance. We're looking at nutrient status and testing and seeing, you know, making sure nutrient levels are great, blood markers and things like that. We're looking at supporting sleep, but rebuilding safety, which is part of all of that, is part of rebuilding safety in your nervous system. So all of those things are really important. They're my sort of foundational pillars. But there are daily micro moments, daily micro habits that we can incorporate that help encourage, help tell the brain that you're safe. Safety is a felt experience. It's not an intellectual one. So that's, like earlier I said, it's not really about mindset. We can't just go, we can't just tell the brain we're safe, we're safe, we're safe, we're safe. Sometimes it can help to keep repeating a mantra of safety if you're feeling really anxious about, you know, you're on a flight or something and you're really anxious, but the turbulence, you can just remind yourself, I'm safe, I'm safe. But safety is a felt experience. We can't really just tell the brain it's okay, it's okay. So daily micro habits include getting more morning daylight. You might think, what on earth has that got to do with telling the brain we're safe? But honestly, the brain is constantly looking for, it's looking for consistency and it's looking for natural rhythms. So one of the ways to tell the brain, I am in a natural rhythm, we are in a natural rhythm, is giving it daylight first thing in the morning. So getting outside, whether you just have an outdoor space at home that you can get outside into, as soon as, you know, daylight is up, obviously we're going through winter now, so it's a little bit later than usual, but getting outside first thing in the morning, ideally within 30 minutes of waking. You can use a 10,000 lux light box, very simple one that you can get on Amazon for about £30. Switch that on first thing in the morning and then get out into daylight once it is daylight. Slow breathing. So just checking in on your breath every so often, you know, micro times throughout the day, multiple times. Am I chest breathing? Am I shallow breathing? Am I just talking too fast, talking too much and not taking a breath? So there's just that slowing down. Can I just take a minute to breathe in to a count of four and breathe out to a count of six, and so on for a few minutes. And then just try to regularly check in with that throughout the day. Having a warm cup of something you enjoy. For me, it's green tea. Green tea brings me so much joy. I have researched all over the world for different types of green tea. I know the ones I like. I have to make sure I have them in stock all the time, because most of these you can't even get in regular shops or coffee shops. And that is my thing, being at home with a warm cup of the most beautiful types and tastes of green tea is just my joy. So what's yours? Stepping outside for 60 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, however long you've got to step outside regularly. So wherever you are, whether you're working from home, whether you're working in a public environment, whether you're in an office, can you step outside as often as you possibly can throughout the day? Just have a minute. Be outside in daylight. The brain wants to see daylight throughout the day, darkness throughout the night. music you love. Do you listen to music you love anymore? Have you stopped? Are you listening to music you don't really care for? You know, think about music that brings you joy. Could it be from childhood, from your teenage years, from your 20s, whatever it might be, and make sure you're listening to that kind of music. Laughter, listening to, you know, if you don't have anyone around you that's making you laugh or to be with, listen to your favorite comedian on Spotify or Netflix, you know, watching your favorite comedian on stand-up, whatever that might be. Grounding your feet on the floor, getting outside, you know, natural floor. Could you go into grass, mud, sand, whatever it is you can do. Being in nature, spending as much time in nature. Again, it doesn't have to be long. Research shows that just 2 hours a week split across the 7 days was enough to improve mood, energy and resilience, stress resilience in people. So just getting outside for 10, 15, 20 minutes a day in nature of any kind is a really great way, great thing to start in, you know, incorporating into your day every week, every day of every week. More connection. Can you connect more with friends, with family, with people you maybe you don't connect enough? Is there anything you can do to change that so you have more time? We always feel great after, you know, a little chinwag with our best friends or just people we find funny or uplifting. So making sure we're also keeping an eye on the types of people we are spending time with and allowing into our lives. Are we keeping any toxic friendships or, you know, people that drain us and put everything on us and don't really, you know, there's not that sort of balance there. So definitely thinking about that. Any time to be creative and play. Me personally, I know I feel great when I just draw. I'm not a great drawer, but that doesn't matter. When I draw something, I just like using a regular pencil, plain piece of paper, and I'll just draw something. It could be anything, my TV, my cup of tea. I feel great. I feel so in the moment and calm. I just don't do it enough. I've got a pencil and a pad in my kitchen drawer. And every time I open the kitchen drawer, it's there and I leave it there. I need to get it out and start doing it more often. So things like that, whatever brings you joy, what makes you feel good that you're not doing enough of? How can you bring that into your day with these micro moments? Your nervous system needs to have these little drops of safety all day long. We don't just want to do one yoga class on a Thursday and one long walk at the weekend in nature and think we're doing enough. We're not. It has to be daily. We want to remind the brain multiple intervals throughout the day that we're calm and safe. And like I say, even just 1 minute popping outside, just looking up, just taking in, like looking up at the sky, like taking a breath is helpful. 2 to 3 minutes of the 4-6 breathing into count of four, breathing out to count of six, just multiple times throughout the day, checking in on that, hand on heart, how am I breathing? A cup of tea outside, like all the things I just sort of mentioned, just for a minute or two, 10 minutes in nature every day, instead of just one long walk a week is great, but can you do it every day in some shorter form as well? Protect your sleep like it's medicine, because sleep is literally medicine. Sleep is everything. I think we all know that. But sleep is one of the biggest ways to tell your brain that you're safe. So little things like no scrolling on your phone in the hour before bed. So have that cutoff point. What time do you go to bed? Work back an hour. Do not use your phone after then. Put it away, put it on flight mode, leave it charging in a different room, ignore it. You don't need to touch that phone until the next day, but not as soon as you wake up. Give yourself half an hour, at least an hour, if possible, in the morning before you touch your phone and start going into the external world. Dim the lights in the evening from early evening. Keep them dim everywhere. Avoid this bright blue light exposure during the evening. Avoid any late night exercise. We really should calm that down by sort of 3-4 o'clock, if not before, but that would be the latest. A calm, gentle stroll in the evening after dinner. If it's a nice summer's evening, that's fine, but avoid any, or some gentle yoga, avoid any, you know, intense exercise. You're basically sending the wrong signals to your brain that it's time to get up and be active for the next few hours versus I'm going to go to bed soon. Keep your room cool. Make sure you're not sleeping in a very hot room, and just reduce evening stimulation, including exercise, including conversations, stressful conversations, WhatsApps, going into all your WhatsApp groups and replying to all these groups and, you know, events that are going on that are stressing you out. Try to avoid doing that at night, and particularly for that hour before bed. Like I said, put that phone away. Sleep is where cortisol gets a chance to reset. And the good news about all of this is that we can start to reset. We can start to help cortisol to reset by doing these little things I just mentioned in the evening to support a better sleep and cortisol reset. And then over time, very quickly over time, this starts to have a knock-on impact, a compound effect over time, very quickly. But we can start to undo a lot of the stress and the, you know, what we might feel is damage. It's not. We can really start to undo it all and start to rebalance, tell the brain we're safe. And then soon it starts to believe you, and everything else, all the other systems in the body start to benefit as well. And we just generally start to feel much better very quickly, and even more so over time. Other things we can do is have a look, reevaluate our exercise. If we're doing things like spin, HIIT, lots of running, all of these exercises, boot camp style classes, they spike cortisol. And, you know, these may have worked in our 30s when we weren't dealing with this new hormonal terrain that we have in our 40s that I've explained. So now we want to be doing things that support cortisol versus continue to spike it and get it out of whack. Even if we have low cortisol, we still don't want to be doing, we definitely, if we're in the low cortisol state, we do not want to be doing anything that demands too much cortisol, because it's just going to completely wipe us out. So either way, we don't want to be doing those things. Instead, focus on walking in nature, preferably. That very gentle cardio, gentle yoga, and of course, strength training. That's always, always important. It's going to increase, muscle, help you build muscle mass without spiking cortisol like all the other types of exercises would do. But also on the flip side of that, it's not enough movement also spikes cortisol. That's a stressor. If we're sedentary all the time, that's a stressor. So we also don't want to be too sedentary, too restful all the time. We need to balance it out. So if you're someone who's maybe in a state where you're not able to train as much, maybe you are feeling really fatigued all the time and anything you do just wipes you out, just try and get that balance between in all the different sort of gentle movement you could do throughout the day, like walking, like gentle yoga, even just for 5 minutes. A 5 minute yoga flow if you're at home, a 10 minute Qigong class if you're at home. These, all of these things that are available on YouTube for free. And if you're not at home, you're not able to just go off and do those things. Again, it's just movement, walk up and down stairs. Take yourself off for a purposeful walk around the block just to get that movement in regular intervals throughout the day. Stop skipping meals if this applies to you. Stop skipping breakfast. Stop fasting till 11 o'clock to try and lose weight or get healthier. Low blood sugar causes a massive cortisol spike, dysregulation, just further dysregulates cortisol. So when we're in our 40s, we really want to try and get breakfast in within 90 minutes of waking, 60 to 90 minutes of waking. Perimenopausal bodies do much better with that, particularly protein. Make it a protein fat rich breakfast as opposed to a big carbohydrate bowl of porridge. Make it a protein based meal. So could it be, animal foods? Could it be eggs? Could it be fish? Could it be leftover dinner, leftover chicken, leftover curry, whatever it might be? Have that in the morning. It could take a while to get used to eating those kind of foods in the morning, but I promise you, you can get used to it. You can retrain yourself to eat that way. It could be a good quality homemade protein smoothie, using a good quality unflavored protein powder, plenty of things like seeds, berries to sweeten it, avoiding other high sugar fruits, throwing in some coconut oil, some avocado, some nut butter, some green leaves. Really great way to get your protein in that way. And balance your meals. Have them every 4 to 5 hours. Start with that protein and fat-rich breakfast, then have a lunch, protein and fat-rich with some carbohydrates and some colorful vegetables, and the same for dinner. And so you're kind of looking to spread that out between maybe a 12-hour window between breakfast and starting breakfast and finishing dinner, something like that. And then a 12-hour fast between finishing dinner and starting breakfast the next day. So 12-12, that's a kind of way, another way of doing time-restricted feeding, or some people call it intermittent fasting, but technically it's time-restricted feeding. You can increase that that fast overnight from 12 hours to say 13 hours or maximum 14 hours usually works best with women in their 40s. Pushing that fast to 16 hours can be too much. That's when we're like not eating breakfast until 10, 11 o'clock. And in that time between waking and getting to breakfast, our blood sugar could have gone really low, triggering a massive cortisol response, because that's low blood sugar is a stressor. And it's really hard to come back from that for the rest of the day in terms of energy, mood, cravings, focus. The other thing to consider is hydration and electrolytes. Are you drinking enough water? Are you drinking too much water? Some of us are washing out all of our electrolytes throughout the day because we're having too much water. I was definitely guilty of that. So just making sure, start the day with a nice big glass of water to hydrate over from the night, and then just gradually continually sip small amounts of water throughout the day. And by the end of the day, you'll have had enough. That also includes herbal teas as well, non-caffeinated herbal teas classes as towards your water. And thinking about potassium, magnesium, and sodium, those are your key electrolytes. So maybe you could do with getting a really good quality electrolyte that you can just shove in your morning water. Really helpful to calm the nervous system and support adrenal health. Some supportive supplements, always optional, always secondary to lifestyle, but can be very helpful. I would always suggest magnesium glycinate for everybody. It's my favorite form. It is the best form of magnesium for relaxation, supporting calm, reducing anxiety. I love to suggest I take this religiously every night, an hour, half an hour before bed. I take about 400 milligrams of magnesium glycinate. Vitamin C can be very helpful. You want preferably ascorbic acid, a time release dose, or just about 500 milligrams, maybe twice a day, morning and evening. That could be really great to support your adrenal health. Theanine is a lovely calming amino acid that you can get in supplement form, about 200, 300 milligrams of L-theanine. Lovely in the afternoon to help sort of calm you down in the afternoon, get you ready for a calmer evening as opposed to feeling all that heightened anxiety and stress. It can be very helpful. You can also take it just before bed as well with your magnesium glycinate. Is really great, but only if you know, if you've done that 4-point saliva test for cortisol and you know categorically that your cortisol is very high, then you can take phosphatidylserine. I can spell that for anyone who needs to know. I can put it in the show notes. Is really great to help sort of calm that stress response and bring that down. But you do need to test first, I would say. Relora is another calming sort of flower extract that's great for high cortisol as well. If we have that real tired but wired, you know, cannot calm down at night, that can be really helpful for sleep. Ashwagandha, rhodiola, holy basil, these are great adaptogens. Some people take them as a blend, some people take them all on their own. So you, in a blend, you just get less of each one. If you take them on their own, you're going to get more therapeutic doses of each one. So maybe taking them on their own is better. And licorice. I would always caution with licorice. You only want to use licorice if you know for a fact you have low cortisol, because you've done testing, because licorice helps to increase cortisol. So only if we have low levels do we want to take that. So just to wrap this up, I know this has been a long one. Your body isn't failing you. It's protecting you. All of these symptoms that you're experiencing, everything we've been through, is about protection. It's your brain sensing things, picking up on your environment, including picking up on the environment of your new hormonal picture now. This decline in progesterone stressed it out. It made it worry about you. The erratic nature of estrogen has made it worry about you, you know? So it's constantly scanning your inner physiology and your outer environment to protect you. Your stress response in your 40s isn't a flaw. It's not a weakness. It's not about aging. It's not how it's going to be forever. It's your brain just working overtime to keep you safe during this hormonal transition, which is really stressful physiologically. But when you support your nervous system, you support your hormones. You support your cortisol rhythm, your sleep, your mood, your metabolism, your energy, your entire physiology when we support our nervous system. So these daily, small daily shifts can create a profound change. Support and calm, you know, tell your brain that you're safe. The other thing just to mention before we finish is something known as somatic experiencing, which is a really lovely, lesser known, but very, very important sort of therapy that we should be aware of and understand. And I'm actually going to share in the show notes a link to a lady that I've been following on Instagram. Sorry, not I follow her on YouTube. Her name's Sam Miller. She is a somatic experiencing coach or therapist, and she is the way that she explains your brain needing to understand that it's safe is really, really helpful, because not many people are talking about it that way. We're all talking about stress management tools and this, that, and the other, but understanding somatic experiencing, so which is basically about understanding how you, I'm not going to explain it very well, but feeling into your body, feeling into any sensations, whether that's pain, discomfort, fluttering, you know, any sensations at all, feeling into those and allowing them to be there and pass through, rather than constantly trying to, you know, overcome all of these feelings and sensations or override them. So that's another way. Somatic experiencing is another way of telling your brain that you're safe. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes in case anyone wants to check out Sam Miller and somatic experiencing. So thank you for listening. I hope this has been helpful, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.